a dab hand at accents, because there's the old Sussex accent, which barely exists anymore. So I went to this BBC website where they have accents from all around England, and I played these interviews with old men down in the 1970s talking about their childhoods, just to try and get the accent right. And I thought he would be fantastic, because he has all the accents, he loves the material. And I sent him the book and said, would you do this? And he said, absolutely. So I love that. We have Michael Sheen, who has now got to play the only person in the universe to have been David Frost, Brian Clough, Kenneth Williams, and me.
Neil Gaiman speaking there to Nick Briggs. And The Ocean at the End of the Lane, next week's book at bedtime, begins over on Radio 4 on Monday night at 10:45.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
It's 3 o'clock. Hello from me, Jim Lee. Our 60-minute drama in a moment is the first part of a novel by Neville Shute, which finds the fortunes of post-war Britain's aviation industry depending on a new plane. But could the design be fatally flawed? At 4, Mel Gedroych will be looking into the fate of the 29,000 rubber bath toys that went missing in the Pacific Ocean. And later, deep in the catacombs beneath the Paris Opera House, something is stirring. The Phantom of the Opera begins tonight at 6. No Highway is a 1948 novel by Neville Shute, which later formed the basis of the 1951 film No Highway in the Sky. It was a two-part classic serial in August 2010. It's 1948. The future of Britain's transatlantic aviation industry rests on the success of a new plane, the Rutland Reindeer. One has crashed already, and an eccentric government scientist believes more will follow. The race is on to prove his theory before reindeer start to fall from the sky.
Gander, this is CAT-0317. Come in, please.
CAT-0317, this is Gander Control.
Gander, I'm painting a line of weather which appears to be moderate. Possible heavy snow about 5 miles ahead.
We have that, 317. Shouldn't cause you any delay.
Thank you, Gander.
Any concerns over ETA, you should contact Montreal Control on 120.8.
120.8. Hold on. I think it's clearing. As you say, should be no problem, Gander.
Roger, 317. Don't want to scratch that nice new airplane you have there.
Don't even want to get it wet. Thank you, Gander.
Over and out, CA-20317.
No Highway by Neville Shute. Dramatised by Mike Walker. Episode 1.
You're early. Drink your tea. Eat your toast.
It's 8:10.
You're not a manager anymore, darling. You're the deputy director. You shouldn't be too early. It'll make them feel you're spying on people. And you know how touchy scientists are. Avoid confrontation, use persuasion. Isn't that what you're always saying? Eat your toast.
Is there any butter?
I used the last coupon on Tuesday. You'll have to wait. Now stop rushing about. Sit down. Breathe deeply.
I'm not in your class, miss.
Little boys, big boys are all the same in the end, darling. Plum jam?
Is it the stuff your mother made?
It's mine.
I know you're right, sweetheart. I need to relax. But
what?
I'm not what they expected. I came from industry. I was an engineer. I'm not a lab man. I'm too bloody young.
Don't swear. It shows lack of authority.
It's Farnborough. The headquarters. I'm new, I'm brash.
And you're exactly what they need to shake them up.
I'm not at all sure they'll like that.
Isn't Farnborough supposed to be experimental, not traditional? And you're in charge. It's what being the boss means. Another slice?
The deputy boss. actually, and no more toast. I'll see you this evening. Have a good day.
I'll see if the butcher has any chops. He promised me to, and I've been saving our coupons. Do you have to go?
I wish I didn't, but...
Oh, damn.
Don't swear. Shows lack of authority.
Don't worry, this is important.
Can it wait this evening?
No, I don't think it can, Dennis.
This sounds serious.
I don't know, it may be just nothing at all, but I had this child in my class, Elspeth. Yesterday, during maths, she was going on about pyramidology.
You must have brought that in since I was at school. Look, is this really...
It's the study of the Great Pyramid in Egypt. It appears that if you take a directional vector from the apex of the pyramid and the Mount of Olives, using certain calculations, you can work out when and where Jesus Christ is going to return to Earth.
I'm sorry, sweet, but, well, shouldn't you be talking to...
You see, her calculations were very good. I mean, they were brilliant.
Except they were nonsense. How old is she?
She's 12. Way ahead of her age in some respects, in others. She looks about 10, and she wears these dreadful dresses. No friends.
I can understand your concern. But...
Elspeth, honey.
Oh, my man, honey.
Exactly. Elspeth was telling me that she helps her father with the calculations, and they've discovered a mistake. And the new figures show the exact date that Christ will be coming to Earth in Glastonbury. And they're the only ones who know.
At least it's not at Farnborough. Though I'm sure a few of my boffins would like to examine him on his mode of heavenly propulsion.
It's not funny, Dennis. Well, I don't think it is. I don't think the child's head should be filled with pyramidology.
I didn't even know that honey was married.
I think the mother's dead, from what Elspeth told me.
What should I do? As far as I know, honey is... sound enough. His work is good. He's testing the reindeer's tail.
Father Christmas's reindeers? Is that what you do over there?
The Rutland reindeer, the new transatlantic airliner.
I know perfectly well what the reindeer is, darling. I'm joking. You know, you've become very serious since taking this job. Too serious sometimes, I think.
Well, maybe you're right. Anyway, if you like, I'll have a word with him.
Just check things are fine at home. I don't want to call him into school. If you could just... be subtle.
Wilco. And now
you need to go. So go.
Good morning, Miss Leroyd.
Good morning, sir.
What do I have today?
You've a meeting with the director at 2:30. Budgetary requirements for the first quarter.
Should be fun.
And Mr. Wiley from the Ministry at 4.
Right. Would you be kind enough to look out Mr. Honey's file for me? And if I'm wanted, I'll be in his lab this morning.
Very good, sir. Shall I get some earplugs?
Very impressive! I did not catch that, sir! I said very impressive! If rather loud! Well, I'm proud!
Managed to bear that noise all day.
We take the precaution of wearing earplugs whenever we work in the test hangar.
Of course.
We were fortunate to obtain it.
It?
A complete tail assembly from a new reindeer. They sent us two 3 years ago before the aircraft went into service. We tested one to destruction, the other was really not wanted.
Until you decided to ruin everyone's hearing with it.
The decibel level beyond the perimeter of the testing bay is within the prescribed limits for RAE procedure.
Yes. So, how's it coming along? What are your conclusions?
Conclusions?
How long do you contemplate running the test? There are obviously budgetary considerations, and we're looking at next year, and your interim reports note no problems with stress of the airframe at this point.
I would not expect any.
Ah.
At this point.
Is there a point when, theoretically, you might?
If you would care to examine...
The maths look a little beyond me, Mr. Honey.
It is comparatively simple. The mass energy absorption factor, I call it UM in the papers, varies with each type of structure, and one really has to establish that first.
You mean you have to break a tailplane before you know when it'll break?
That would establish the factor.
And having found out the factor, you could calculate when it broke.
apart from the fact that you've seen it break.
You may then apply that factor to other frames of a similar design vibrated on a different range of frequencies.
Yes.
A tiny amount of energy is absorbed into the structure, which is proportionate to the mass of the structure and the time the vibration is applied. Schildgrad of Uppsala University proved that this does not appear in any of the usual forms, heat, electrical potential or momentum. Instead, this small energy flow produces a state of tension within the nucleus of the aluminium, of which the alloy is mainly composed, and ultimately this leads to nuclear separation. The time this takes to occur is therefore directly proportional to UM.
And what value have you assigned to UM for that tailplane out there?
Well, provisionally, just to get an idea of how long the trial is likely to go on, I made a rough estimate of 2.863 times 10 to the power of minus 7.
Well, if that's what you call a rough estimate, Mr. Honey, I'd like to see a detailed one. When, then, do you expect something to happen out there in the testing shed?
Taking that value for UM, there should be evidence of nuclear separation at about 1,440 hours.
What? Then it breaks?
I think the material could be expected to suffer some change, possibly catastrophic, about that time. The structure would become crystalline and fail.
How long has it run so far?
423 hours as of this morning. We only run during the day. The director is not keen on night running. I believe it is the budget.
Sir, can I have a word?
Aren't we due to meet this afternoon, Scott?
We are, but this is something rather different. Something that I'd rather not have minuted just yet.
Very well. Shall we enjoy the weather? Smoke?
Thank you.
Well, come on, man. What's so all-fired important?
Mr. Honey thinks the front spar of the reindeer tail assembly will fail from fatigue at 1,440 hours.
Hold your horses, Scott. The range has only just gone into service. It's been thoroughly tested.
I know that, sir. Nevertheless, Honey has some pretty convincing figures, as far as I can understand them.
The theoretical?
Yes. So far, the base theory is nuclear, which is way out of my bailiwick.
And mine. His test will show when?
3 months, at the present rate. The thing is, sir, the planes in service are piling up flight hours faster than Honey's test rig. They fly day and night. We only run in the daytime.
What's the longest time any of the Rangers have done?
I called Ferguson at the Ministry. He says between 200 and 300 each.
And does our Mr. Honey see any risk before the critical time frame?
None at all.
Well, that gives us some room to manoeuvre.
But Honey is given to absolutes, and there was the Labrador crash.
Was that a reindeer?
It was, out of Gander, bound for Montreal. The Russian ambassador was on board. Everyone died.
That one caused a bit of a stink, I recall. They must have investigated it thoroughly. The Ruskies would have demanded it.
Yes, pilot error.
And it is Honey, of course. You know about the man.
Oh, damn! Sorry, sir. My wife teaches his daughter. She wanted me to see how they're getting on. His wife died.
Bomb casualty. Tragic. Young woman like that. You know he got caught up with planchettes and Ouija boards, all that stuff. Spiritualist churches.
Tried to get in contact?
Something like that.
I'd only heard about the pyramids and the imminent return of our Lord to Glastonbury or some such.
Well, there were thoughts about retiring the man, sending him off to a nursing home or something. Only the work was sound enough, and he doesn't exactly make a splash. Until now. Has he gone off his head, Scott?
The science looks okay as far as I can understand it, which isn't far.
What do you feel?
It feels possible.
Look, send him up to London. Let him talk to Dolbear at the Air Ministry. He's their nuclear expert.
I'll arrange it for Friday if I can.
Good man. I suggest we get together next Monday and discuss what, if anything, has come of it. Oh, and I read your paper, High Mach Speeds.
I'm supposed to be reading it to the Royal Aeronautical Society in a couple of weeks.
Sound stuff. And you need a few papers on your CV. Good for you, good for us.
Whiskey and soda?
Oh, just the thing, sweetheart.
Hard day?
Worrying day. I saw your Mr. Honey, but I didn't really get a chance to quiz him. He had some rather disquieting theories about the reindeer.
Oh. And?
He thinks there's a problem.
Is there?
Well, he thinks so, and he's our expert.
So what are you going to do? Here you are. Cigarette?
We're sending Honey up to London on Friday to see some atomic poo bar at the Ministry.
Oh, well, I tell you what, I was thinking of inviting the daughter round on Friday. She wants to hear the pastoral which they're broadcasting, and their radio is broken. So why not get your Mr. Honey to come round when he gets back? He can tell you his news, and I can look at the two of them together, see how things seem to be. And to be honest, I'd rather like to know that Elspeth has had at least one good meal. I think Honey does the cooking at home, and I can't imagine he's Philip Harpen.
Why not? The sooner we get some facts on the table, the better.
So, Elspeth, what did you think?
It was super, Mrs. Scott, although they played it very slowly, and I think it sent Mr. Scott to sleep.
No. I always listen to music with my eyes closed. It helps my concentration.
That's what he says. Another cup of tea? Some more cake?
No, really, I shouldn't.
Of course you should. That's why I made it. Do you get cake at home a lot?
Not really. Daddy isn't good at making cakes.
I tell you what, in half term, I'll teach you how to bake a cake yourself. How about that?
That would be super.
That'll be your daddy now, Elspeth. Mr. Honey, you make good time. Come in, come in. Thank you. A whiskey? Or a cup of tea?
Mrs. Scott made a cake, Daddy. It's ever so good. It's got raisins in it and condensed milk.
Tea, please, if it's no trouble. I hope you haven't been a bother, Elspeth.
Of course she hasn't. It's been a pleasure having her here. And the pot's still hot.
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Scott.
Listen, I expect you two have a lot to talk about, so why don't Elspeth and I do the washing up and let you men get on?
Can I? I'm awfully good at washing up. If they did washing up at school, I'd be first. I'd rather be first in washing up than first in arithmetic.
I think it's better to be first in arithmetic, Elspeth. Not everybody can be good at that.
Have a seat.
Thank you. It's very good of you to have Elspeth, Dr. Scott, and your wife too.
No trouble at all. You're sure I can't get your whiskey? I'm going to have one.
Alcohol disrupts the psychic receptors.
Psychic?
Similar to a radio receiving certain frequencies. For instance, the ley lines running the length and breadth of the country, they're quite clear if you're attuned.
If we could discuss how it went at the Ministry, I expect Elspeth needs to get home. School and all that.
Oh, yes, she loves school. She's very fond of Mrs. Scott. She talks about her a lot.
Well, I suppose she has her own friends, too.
Not really.
Doesn't she get lonely? What does she do in the holidays?
She reads a lot and listens to the radio. She enjoys equations.
So, the meeting.
I'm afraid they were not really interested. Sir Philip Dolbear...
He knows his nuclear science.
He may, but he was only interested in picking holes in my theory. I'm afraid you won't be getting a positive report from him.
How so?
He wants everything docketed and proved and each stage made secure and buttoned up, those were his words, before proceeding to the next. I recommended he look at Fermi's work or Bohr's. He appeared to regard my tests as being tests of the reindeer's tail assembly rather than a procedure to find errors in a theory and proceed by that route.
Well, the thing is, Mr. Honey, there are at least five reindeers proceeding back and forth across the Atlantic every day. There is nothing theoretical about them or the passengers and crews.
Yeah, that is not my concern, Mr. Scott.
No, I'm afraid it's mine.
Are you finished?
Daddy, Mrs. Scott's got these terrific mops you can use to wash up. And they've got hot water. You just turn it on, and there it is. Can we have hot water too? It would be ever so much better than boiling kettles.
I expect it is rather expensive, Elspeth.
Not at all. You can hire the water heater from the electricity company. It only costs about two bob a quarter. And I think Elspeth really ought to have hot water. I'm sure you'd find it a great convenience.
We can, Daddy. Can't we?
I tell you what, I pass the offices on the way home from school. I'll pop in and ask them to come round and see you one evening this week, Mr. Hannigan.
Well, if you're sure it's no trouble.
And Mrs. Scott is going to teach me how to make cake.
Not one of my accomplishments. My wife used to...
Your coats.
Thank you ever so much, Mrs. Scott.
That's all right, dear. They're going to be broadcasting all the Beethoven symphonies over Christmas. Would you like to come round and listen?
If you're certain it will be no trouble.
Of course not. Good night, Elspeth. Good night, Mr. Honey.
Good night. Good night. Thank you, Mrs. Scott.
So, what do you think of Holly?
I sort of like him. But he's a mess, isn't he? When did he buy that suit? Has it ever been keyed? And I do feel sad for that little girl stuck on her own with no hot water and no washing up mops.
Do you think...
Oh, I think she's all right. She's very bright and capable. I think she manages him without him ever realising it. It's just that he's terribly vague and he doesn't really understand... Oh, thanks, darling. She needs a mother or a big sister. Someone she can talk to about growing up who can help her buy her first brassiere.
Well, buying a brassiere is hardly...
Believe me, Dennis, it is. If we have a daughter, you'll find out just how difficult it is for girls to grow up these days. I'm sure Honey does his best, but teaching Elspeth about the lost tribes of Israel and Shalaman somebody, king of Assyria, isn't enough. She should be listening to Frank Sinatra. What about you? How did his meeting go?
Not well. They didn't take to him at the ministry. I suspect someone had a peek at his file and...
What are you going to do?
At the moment, I don't honestly know what I'm going to do. Honey's figures could be nonsense, for all I know. His theory's as mad as the ley lines of power, or whatever it was.
On the other hand, if he is right...
At least we have a little time. None of the reindeer flying have more than 350 hours on the clock.
What about the one that crashed?
I imagine that's similar. But why should it be?
Trim, Jimmy! She's yawing as she approaches Mac Unity.
Penworthy, have you got a moment?
Ah, Dr. Scott, what's got you out of that nice warm office on a Monday morning?
Got a couple of questions.
Fine. You can walk me to the mess.
So, what's up, old man?
You tested the prototype of the reindeer, didn't you?
Most of it.
What was the tailplane like? Was it more than usually flexible? Was there much movement of the tip in flight?
Well, it had a pretty high aspect ratio, so there was considerable waggle. On the ground, you could push the tip, say, 6 inches up and down.
But no problems?
Absolutely not. She's a beautiful plane. Prendergast did a fine job on her.
What about in rough conditions?
You could see the plane's flex from the aft cabin windows, but that's not unusual.
In all conditions?
I should say so. We had her for about 3 months.
As long as that? How many hours, approximately?
I did about 200, and there were the firm's trials before that, of course.
And after it left here?
I flew it down to the CATO experimental flight.
And how many hours did they do?
A good few. They put it on long-haul tests, the Atlantic run.
And then it went into service?
Yes. Look, if you want to be certain about the flight hours, they'll have them at the Rutland Works. You should give them a call.
I'll do that, thanks. Is the directory, Miss Ellis?
I'll just...
No, don't worry. I'll go straight through.
Scott, what's the all-fired rush, man? You look like you've seen a ghost.
I was just talking to Squadron Leader Penworthy, sir. He did the reindeer tests.
Yes?
It was the one that went down in Labrador.
Yes, pilot error.
I got onto the company, and as closely as we can estimate, that aircraft had actually flown 1,339 hours before it crashed.
And Honey's estimate?
1,440.
Bloody hell. That puts the cat amongst the pigeons.
I think it does at least indicate we should err on the side of caution.
Your recommendation?
I don't think any reindeer should be in the air beyond 500 hours.
What would that give CATO?
About 250, 300 hours flying time, enough to bring the Viscount back into service.
They won't do it, my boy. National prestige at stake. A new government, Britain's place in the post-war world.
And if our bloody airliners start falling out of the sky, how will that affect our prestige? I apologise, sir. There was no cause for that.
There's every cause, Scott. If we're going to get anything practical done here, someone is going to have to see Ferguson at the Air Ministry. He's the bod in charge of accident reports and flight safety. It's him you have to convince.
Me?
Time you got out from behind that desk. See the man. Make him understand. We need a 500-hour limit and a proper investigation.
What if I can't do it, sir?
Then God help us all.
Look, excuse me, miss, but I did have an appointment, you know.
I'm sure Group Captain Ferguson will be with you soon, Mr. Scott. He is a busy man, you know.
And I'm not.
You can send a farmer Waller in now, Miss Sparks.
I heard. Thank you for seeing me at such short notice, Mr. Ferguson.
Sit down, Scott.
Now, what's all this about the reindeer? You have my notes, sir. And Mr. Honey's figures.
And I'm supposed to be impressed by some boffin. Is that it, Scott? I assume you have the board's report on the reindeer crash. And perhaps you haven't had time to read it thoroughly yet.
I've read it, sir, twice.
It appears comprehensive.
Does it?
Are you implying that the Ministry has been in dereliction of its statutory duty to ensure...
Look at the evidence, Mr. Ferguson. That's all I'm asking you to do.
You think we haven't?
I know you have, sir. And I respect your findings. Under the circumstances, they were the only conclusions possible.
Then what are we talking about, Scott?
The circumstances have changed. There was no reason at all to think about premature metal fatigue before. Now there is.
This man, Honey, isn't he some kind of mystic? Believes in witchcraft and all that rot? The man's a zany.
If anyone thinks Mr. Honey would fake his figures for some so-called mystic purpose, then A, what is it? And B, why are we still employing him?
Maybe you should not be.
But we are. Because on any peer review that I or my colleagues can carry out, Honey's science is as sound as this table. He makes no statements. He says only that this is the hypothesis, this is the test that may confirm or deny it. So, we have begun to run that test 24 hours a day, taking into account the additional figures for the downed aircraft. I believe we should put a 500-hour flight limit on all reindeer until we have completed the test.
Are you completely insane, Scott?
Look at the photos from the crash site. The inspection party spent days there in atrocious conditions. The forests were too thick to penetrate. They spent most of their time burying the 31 dead and trying not to freeze. They did not inspect the tail assembly. They had no reason to do so. On the other hand, they photographed everything at the site and, as you'll see, the tail assembly is missing.
As is one of the engines and 5 feet of the starboard wing. They could be close at hand.
Spotter planes saw nothing.
Nothing. And on that nothing, you want me to recommend a 500-hour limit to the entire transatlantic fleet of the National Airline.
Then at least give me a limit, say, of 700 hours, which will allow one of our scientists to fly out to Labrador... Get to the crash site, inspect the fuselage where the tailplane broke free, and radio back his conclusions. Think about it, sir. 31 dead so far. That aircraft was only half loaded, if... God forbid, but if another goes down, no one is going to say then that your conclusions were the most reasonable under the circumstances. They are, quite simply, going to crucify you.
Your man... could find what he needs from the state of the wreckage.
The alloy would have a crystalline structure. It would be clear to an expert. He would take samples and bring them back to the RAE at Farnborough.
Mm. I can give you 1,200 hours.
Sir, that is...
It is what I can give you at this point, Scott. Take it or leave it.
Dr. Scott.
Sorry to bother you, honey. I've just got back from London and... well, I wonder if I could come in.
Yes, I was just putting Elspeth to bed. Come in. Yes, I haven't really got round to redecorating after... yes.
You use the front room as a...
We more or less live in the kitchen and obviously I need the space for the magnum opus, Mysterium Magnum. The work.
Stress patterns in non-ferrous metals.
Bryant is a little out of date now, but it is still a useful text.
Apocrypha in modern life. Numerics of the Bible.
Oh, both are extremely sound. Though Michaels does have some unsound premises, his reading of the Great Pyramid
Daddy.
Is... coming!
Daddy.
May I come up with you?
Of course, I'm sure Elspeth will be thrilled.
Yes.
Elspeth, look, I brought Dr. Scott to say goodnight.
Hello, Dr. Scott.
Hello, Elspeth.
Oh, is that your dolly with you?
Of course not. It's a dish mop.
Ah, is it your best thing?
Oh, yes, it's super.
Wouldn't it be better to use for the washing up?
We've got another for washing. We went to Woolworths and Daddy got two. Actually, I told him we needed two, so he got them.
Good for you. Well, good night, Elspeth.
Good night, Dr. Scott. And say good night to Mrs. Scott, too.
And good night from her as well.
Go to sleep now. Good night. Sit down. I'll fetch another chair.
No. That's all right, honey. I won't take up more of your time than I have to. The thing is, I need someone from Farnborough to go to Canada and look at this crash site. I want you to go. I can't think of anyone who could do it better.
But what about the tests? I need to be here.
This is about more than research.
Anyone can go and look at a bit of metal.
I don't believe so. You're our expert in stress. Actually, you are the expert in stress. Me, I'm a structural engineer who's turned into an administrator. It's my job to make decisions about who does what. Can you accept that?
Of course. You make the decisions, but I do not happen to agree with them. Can you accept that?
You're the logical choice, honey.
Please don't chop logic with me, Dr. Scott.
You're not as mild as sometimes you seem, are you?
It is not me. It is the logic of the case. I'm a theoretical worker, an experimenter. That is where I can do my best work. I'm afraid it is simply out of the question.
You have spent your life in the laboratory. I agree, Mr. Honey. But have you ever actually helped anybody? Because right now we need you. The hundreds, thousands of people who will be crossing the Atlantic in a plane that may be unsound need you. So for once in your life, I am asking you, will you get up off the stool? Will you leave the research bench and go and do something?
What Dr. Scott says, Daddy.
Elspeth, you should be asleep.
I think you should go and help these people.
You really don't understand, Elspeth.
Mummy thinks you should go too.
All right, go back to bed now.
I'm sorry, honey. I didn't mean to.
I won't have to be away too long, will I?
And?
He's going. It was weird, darling, that little girl just appearing in her nightie. So calm. Telling him that Mummy thinks you should go too. Mummy thinks. Present tense.
She was awake.
She was there. She made him change his mind. I suppose that's what matters, isn't it? He changed his mind.
He told me he had hiking boots and shorts from before the war, when he and his wife used to go on walks. I told him it wouldn't be very much good in the Canadian forests.
So what did you suggest?
We'll get in touch with the accident and investigation people who are going to escort him. They'll supply everything he needs. And I told him to get himself a decent suit. After all, he is representing Farnborough. Thanks.
Can he do it?
He'd better. This isn't going to be cheap.
But it's necessary.
It's the only way we've got of strengthening our hand. If Annie comes back with proof the airframe alloys have a crystalline structure, they'll have to listen to us.
And what about Elspeth? After what you said about the state of the house, I don't like the idea of her being there alone. If we had any extra room, I'd say she could stay here, but... Well, maybe she could use the settee or...
Honey says their cleaning lady will sleep over whilst he's away and keep an eye on the girl. Make sure she gets regular meals and all that. After all, I'm his boss, not his ruddy welfare worker.
If you're certain about the cleaning lady... It's half term next week. I won't be able to check on her at school.
It'll be all right, really, sweetheart. We've finally got things on the move. I have a feeling, well, fingers crossed, but we're making headway.
And it all depends on Mr. Honey.
Excuse me?
Yes, sir?
The porter told me that this is the CATO departure point. My name is Honey.
Mr. Honey? Yes, of course, sir. We'll take care of your luggage, and if you'd like to go through to the lounge, you'll be able to board the coach for the airport in about half an hour. Would you care for a tea or a coffee whilst you wait?
Oh, no, that's splendid. Yes, very, my luggage?
All taken care of, sir. Hello, sir. You are?
Mr. Honey, from Farnborough.
I'm your stewardess, Miss Corder. I'll be looking after you during the flight.
Seems a lot of trouble for one passenger.
Oh, CATO takes trouble for all our passengers, sir. Though you are a little special, of course, coming from Farnborough.
Oh, no, not really.
Well, the captain thinks so, and I know he'll want to show you the flight deck once we're airborne. Would you like to come aboard? Do you fly a lot, Mr. Honey?
No, very little, miss. My work is all in the laboratory. This is quite an adventure for me. Though, I must say, I do feel just a little nervous.
Well, we're not that full, so I'll have lots of time to see that everything's all right for you. And you'll get an extra treat this trip, since one of your fellow passengers is Monica Teasdale. The film star? Mr. Honey, are you all right? Sir?
Yes, of course. I do apologise. I'm just...
If you'll take your seat, Mr. Honey, and fasten your safety belt.
Yes, I'm sorry, I can't seem to find... of course, yes, thank you, miss.
Just while we take off. Is it quite comfortable?
Oh, yes, perfectly, thank you.
Say, do you think I could get a drink over here, sweetheart?
Excuse me, sir. I'm sorry, Miss Teasdale, we cannot serve alcohol until we're airborne. It's the licensing laws. I could get you a coffee, though.
If you could, that'd be fine.
There you are, Miss Teasdale. Champagne with the compliments of CATO.
Thank you, sweetheart. I never fly without the bubbles.
Can you tell me when we're due to arrive, please, miss?
The captain says our estimated arrival time at Gander is 0700 hours UK time, and takeoff from there will be 0830. The forecast is for good weather with a slight following wind, so we may make up time as we fly. Now, may I get you anything, Mr. Honey? Champagne? A gin and tonic?
Oh, no. I don't drink alcohol. It clouds the...
Coffee? Plate of sandwiches? We have cheese and tomato, ham.
Ham would be nice, thank you. She looks just like she does in her pictures, doesn't she?
Miss Teasdale? Well, not so much close up, but she's ever so nice. Not like some of the celebrities we carry. I'll get your sandwiches.
Oh, just one more thing, miss. What sort of aeroplane is this?
It's the new Reindeer from the Rutland Company. We've only had them in service for a few months, but you must know all about them.
Mm, only parts of them. It's very comfortable, I must say.
Oh, it's got everything. You should see the galley. We've even got a telephone connecting us to the flight deck. And there's so much room.
I say, Marjorie, which is the boffin?
What's a boffin?
The scientist chappy. Oh, well, that must be him. Look at those glasses.
His name is Honey.
Is that so, Honey? Well, the captain wants to show him the flight deck. Is he awake? Well, never mind, I'll do it. Sir? I say, sir, wake up.
Mm-hmm.
Captain's compliments. Would you like to see the flight deck?
That's very kind of the captain.
Oh, you still got your belt on, sir. There you are. Boffins.
120
knots, ETA Gander 0650. Roger that. This is CATO129, over and out. Ah, Mr. Honey. So what do you think of our reindeer?
It all looks most impressive, Captain. What height are we flying at?
18,500 feet, sir.
We're pressurized to approximately 7,000.
And how'd you find the aeroplane, Captain?
Oh, she's a wizard job, Mr. Honey. Wouldn't want to go back to the old Viscounts after this. It's our first Atlantic flight with this craft, but we've been operating in the South Atlantic on loan to Anglo-Brazil for a tryout. Charts, Dobson.
Captain?
We're about here now. Much faster than the older carriers. I have to keep checking our position. Never used to bother in the old days.
Mm. How about the engines?
Superb. Dobson here is really the engineer on board, so he can bring you up to speed on anything you might want to know.
Thank you, Captain. You don't get any problems?
I rarely do nowadays. Don't even have to do a top overhaul. Not in the nacelles, that is. The workshop Johnnies just take them out and change them after 600 hours. They get a complete overhaul, you see. This lot is our third set. Didn't take much more than a couple of days to get them out and the new lot in.
Do you mean you've already had two sets of engines in this plane and they've each done 600 hours?
Yep, that's the ticket, Doc. 600 now. Don Bradman should be as lucky.
So how many flight hours has this aircraft done?
I suppose 1,500? Hold on, I can let you know exactly. 1,422, up till we took off this evening.
Look, I don't know how to put this to you, but this aircraft is in a very dangerous condition. It has got serious fatigue trouble in the tailplane assembly. You must turn back to England immediately.
Fatigue trouble? What are you talking about? We can't just turn back.
You must! You are in a critical zone. We must turn back. We must!
Dobson.
Captain, it is imperative!
Please, be quiet, Mr... Sir, this gentleman says there's something wrong with the tailplane. I'm afraid he's a bit overwrought.
I am not! I am simply trying to tell you that the aircraft must return to England and land at the first available airfield or...
Or what, Mr. Honey? Take your time. Try and stay calm.
The front spar of the tail assembly is in danger of failing at or around 1,400 flight hours. From test data at Farnborough in my lab, I have projected that...
Hold on there, sir. You have projected?
Yes, it's...
You have no proof of this hypothesis yet?
The figures are clear. The vibration as the plane approaches that horizon will cause a change in the aluminium, bringing about a crystalline state which will result in brittle spars which will crack, as I'm convinced they did, might have done, in the recent reindeer crash in Canada. That is what I am going to investigate.
Oh, come on.
I knew the pilot of that ship, Bill Ward. He was a good man. But the report was conclusive. Pilot error.
Please, you have to believe me. We're all in deadly danger.
I'm sorry, Mr. Honey. I simply can't turn this aircraft around on your say-so without, as you admit yourself, any actual evidence.
Could you at least shut down the inboard engines and, say, reduce the outers to 1,900 revs? That would lessen the vibration a bit.
It would also make us... Dobson?
2 hours late at Gander, sir.
I don't think the airline would appreciate that, Mr. Honey. On the other hand... I could never really see Bill Ward flying into a hill. He just wasn't the kind of man, the kind of pilot he was.
Then if you have any doubt at all, Captain, think of the passengers, the crew.
All right. I'll switch off the inner two and reduce revs, but I cannot turn back.
You're taking a great risk doing that.
I don't believe so. You're the expert, but I'm the captain of this ship, Mr. Honey. It's my job to make decisions about who does what. Can you accept that?
Well, then, let's
Wish ourselves luck.
I'll take you back to your seat, sir, if you'll come with me. Right. You can relax now. Mr. Honey, leave it with the experts. He's absolutely bonkers.
What? Who?
The boffin. He says the tail's gonna fall off.
Is it?
Of course not. Now, you keep an eye on him. Don't let him bother anyone, eh? Give him one of those knockout drops you girls keep in the galley.
But he is from Farnborough.
Do you reckon the inspectors would allow us to fly if there was a problem? They go over everything with a fine-tooth comb. Now, off you go, and keep the little squirt quiet, eh?
Can I get you a drink, Mr. Honey? We have hot milk or Ovaltine, some biscuits. Then perhaps you could try and get some sleep.
All right, Ovaltine, please. Just a moment. Are you married?
No. Why do you ask?
Never mind.
I'll fetch your drink now.
Sweetheart, could you get me a coffee?
Of course, Miss Teasdale.
Excuse me, Miss Teasdale. May I talk to you a moment?
Why, certainly.
Miss Teasdale, my name is Honey.
Honey?
I work at the Royal Aircraft Experimental Establishment, and I've been doing some tests on the Reindeer airliner, and I'm afraid we're in a dangerous position.
Is that so?
And I think when the time comes, you should use the gentleman's toilet.
What?
Excuse me, Mr. Honey, your drink is in your place, and I'm sure that Miss Teasdale would like to get some rest.
I was trying to explain.
Yeah, I heard that before, Honey.
I apologize for making a nuisance of myself. Excuse me.
Sir, you really mustn't upset the other passengers. I can get you a sleeping pill if that would help.
No, I don't need it.
Will you promise not to bother anyone then?
Yes, but will you, please, just for a moment, listen to what I was trying to tell Miss Teasdale?
All right.
I think this aircraft is going to crash in the next hour or so. The captain and crew don't, no one else does, but I know more about it than any of you, and that is what I think. And when it happens, there will be about 3 minutes from incident to impact with the sea. Most of us will die from the deceleration of the crash. There is just one place where a person could avoid that and get out alive and into a life belt. The gentleman's toilet backs onto the galley exactly where the stove is placed. If you sit with your back against that wall, padded with a towel or something, the stove will hold the wall intact and you will probably survive the impact with the water. So, when it happens, will you do that?
It won't happen. But if it did, do you see? I couldn't.
But why not?
I'm the stewardess. I have to do my job and help and calm the passengers.
Even if you know they're going to die and you had a chance of living?
I'm not saying I wouldn't be scared stiff or that I wouldn't want to do it, but I hope, I pray, I would have the strength to do what I had to do, sir. But really, nothing is going to happen except us arriving safe and sound at Gander. Now, if you'll excuse me. Why did you try to warn me, Mr. Honey?
Well, really, for a most unscientific reason. You've been very nice to me, and you seem like a good young woman. I just felt that, well, you should have a chance.
Thank you. Now, I really must go. I do apologize for the disturbance, Miss Teasdale.
Is the little guy nuts?
He'll be quiet now.
I mean, taking me into the men's room? I've heard some doozies in my time, but that takes the cookie.
Well, he's not really... Actually, he thought he was doing the best for you.
Is he really a scientist at the aircraft place?
Oh, yes. He's very distinguished. The ministry are paying a return fare.
And he thinks we're in trouble?
Really, it's nothing. He's just got himself into a nervous state.
Honey, when the waitress tells you the beef is fine, but the chef says no way, I think I'll listen to the chef. Excuse me.
Mind if I sit down?
Of course not.
I was a little short back there. You know how it is. Long flights, not enough sleep. I apologize.
No, I shouldn't have upset you.
It takes more than a pushy guy to upset me. Now, what did you mean about the men's room?
It's complicated.
Don't worry. I've been to enough script meetings to know when there's a good story in there. Just start with Act One. Fade up.
Well, the gentleman's toilet.
Continue with the inner two engines feathered, Captain.
I think so, yes. And maintain the revs on the outers.
You're not taking this boffin seriously, are you, sir?
I'd be remiss if I didn't, Dobson. The man knows his job, and they wouldn't be sending him out to look at the crash if that wasn't the case.
There are no indications at all. Everything reads normal.
It would do. If there's a catastrophic event about to happen, there wouldn't be any warning signs. On the other hand, all the tests are positive. There's nothing except the boffin's word, and even he doesn't know.
Then why are we flying on two engines at reduced rev, sir?
You never flew with Bill Ward, did you?
No, sir, but I heard...
We were together. Bomber Command. He was the best pilot I ever knew. I'd trust him to fly a burning Lank on 1.5 engines with the worst flak the Germans could throw at it, which I did at least twice, and to get us back to Blighty without losing a man. Bill Ward would not fly into a hill.
So what happens now? Do we stop at Gander or carry on? If we don't go on, people are going to say... Well...
That I'm windy? Getting too old for the job? Listen, lad, there are bold pilots and there are old pilots, but there are no old, bold pilots.
Well, it's your decision, sir.
That's what being captain means, Dobson, as you may find out one day. The buck stops with you, because don't ever think the Johnnies that fly the desks will be standing beside you. They won't. We'll do a thorough check at Gander, and if there are any indications of strain, we'll abort.
If not?
We'll carry on to Montreal, where they have the facilities for a thorough overhaul, and if necessary, we can transfer our passengers to an ongoing US carrier.
So by sitting in the men's room...
You'd be safer.
But not safe.
Well, there's no guarantee, just as there's no guarantee that the tale will fail.
But Marcy Bauer could be looking for a new actress for Drums at Dawn.
At least you'd have a chance.
It's a terrible script, Prof.
Then why?
Because I'm not getting any younger, and there aren't that many parts for women. It's all girls in the movies. Why did you choose to tell me?
I suppose because you've given so much pleasure to so many people.
You thought so much of my pictures? Do you go a great deal?
Not now. I used to go a lot when my wife was alive, but I've been... actually not been in the last 5 years. I'm afraid I haven't seen any of your recent films.
You haven't missed much. Back in the 30s, even the early 40s, there was something new about every picture I made. But now, producers have gotten cautious. They don't want to take any risks.
That's what we said. There was always something new about your pictures. No, I think we saw everything you were in from the first day up until the end.
Did your wife die in the war?
The V2. The latest scientific development. You never heard them coming, so... I suppose she wouldn't have known. Elspeth, that's my daughter, she was, well, they dug her out, but they never... Well, Mary was lost.
I'm truly sorry. What happened with Elspeth?
Everything was gone. People were kind, and we got fitted out, and there were offers for a home for Elspeth in the country, safe, and... But it was just the two of us. You see, she'd lost her mother. I didn't want her to lose her father as well. And we got by. We have a house in Farnborough. We may even have hot water by now. And, well, yes, that's it. But you see, Mary was a great fan of your pictures. And I thought that she would have wanted me to do something. So if anything happens, you will go.
To the men's room? Yes, Prof, I will. Isn't that the captain?
Yes, it is.
I wonder what he's up to. Maybe I'll check it out.
I'm not sure he'd like that.
Oh, sweetheart, I might be getting a bit long in the tooth, but the day I can't wrap a man round my little finger ain't come yet.
The ladies is on the other side, Miss Teasdale.
Is that a fact, Captain?
It is.
And you've just come back to the galley for a cup of Java. Coffee.
Yes, Miss Teasdale.
And is that a torch in your hand, or are you just pleased to see me? Or are you trying to examine the tail from the port there?
Has Mr. Honey been talking to you?
You bet. Is he right? Is there any damage?
He's wrong, and there's no damage. There is nothing to worry about.
But if there was, Captain, would sitting with my back against the wall in the men's room help?
I beg your pardon?
With the galley stove on the other side.
Ah, Honey again. Really, Miss Teasdale, you won't need to. The plane is perfectly safe.
Well, that's what he said, see. The plane's perfectly safe until the second it isn't. And then it's too late.
Please believe me, there is nothing for you to worry about. You can go back to your seat with perfect confidence.
Thank you, Captain. Fly safe.
C-A-T-O, always fly safe.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will be landing at Gander in 5 minutes. There will be a 2-hour wait whilst the aircraft is refueled. Passengers will be disembarked and may wait in the transit lounge where breakfast will be available. We will then proceed on our flight to Montreal. Thank you.
Mr. Honey, it looks like we've arrived safely.
We're very fortunate, miss, but the captain intends to fly on.
I'm sure he knows what he's doing. Captain Samuelson is very experienced.
I wonder, as a favour to me, could you ask him if I might have a word once we're on the ground?
Well, you're not his favourite passenger at the moment, and I'm supposed to get you off the plane at once, but I could look the other way and then I wouldn't be able to stop you.
Thank you very much, miss.
Oh, I haven't done anything, really.
And what you said about, when I was asking you to hide in the gents if we crashed, what you said then, that was a very great deal.
Well, nothing happened, so... Oh, please, safety belt on, sir.
Gander approach, this is CATO-129.
CATO-129, proceed inbound for 1 left. You're clear to land. Wind is 230 at 4. You're just a little bit north of final approach.
Roger, Gander. Correcting that. CATO-129 on.
A message from Nanking says the communists were today attacking...
Do hurry up, darling, or your eggs will be hard. And you know you don't like hard eggs.
Well, not rock hard. Besides, it's Saturday.
Pour the coffee, will you?
I thought we might motor out to Dorking. There's a nice little pub down by the river there. We could have a sandwich and a drink and then... Blast. I hope that's not work.
I knew it was a bad idea installing a telephone.
It goes with the job, sweetheart. Hello, Fabra 153.
2 slices of toast.
What? Gander? What?
Shall I butter?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, no!
In episode 1 of No Highway by Neville Shoot, Dennis Scott was played by William Beck, Shirley by Alison Pettit, Honey by Paul Ritter, Marjorie Corder by Naomi Frederick, and Monica Teasdale by Fenella Walgar. Elspeth was Lauren Mote, the director, Tony Bell, Ferguson, Jude Akiwudike, Samuelson, Sam Dale, Dobson, Michael Shelford, and Miss Leroyd, Christine Kavanagh. No Highway is dramatised by Mike Walker and directed by Toby Swift.
In part 1 of No Highway by Neville Shute, dramatised by Mike Walker, Dennis Scott was played by William Beck, Shirley by Alison Pettit, Honey, Paul Ritter, Marjorie Corder, Naomi Frederick, Monica Teasdale, Fenella Woolgar, Elspeth, Lauren Mote, the director, Tony Bell, Ferguson, Jude Akiwudike, Samuelson, Sam Dale, Dobson, Michael Shelford, and Miss Leroyd, Christine Kavanagh. The director was Toby Swift, and you can hear part 2 tomorrow.
Mein Herren, mein Liebchen, mein Kindereggs.
New comedy on BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Prepare yourselves for the Carnival of Monsters. featuring a fearsome fraternity of freaks such as Nottingham karate expert Len.
Hello, how are you doing? Tamagotchi.
Actress Anna Mann.
You might have seen me in a wonderful little show called Pigs in Blankets.
And so many more.
A peculiar set of creatures, all played by Colin Holt.
Some of them will make you laugh. Some of them will make you cry.
Colin Holt's Carnival of Monsters, first on 4Extra, in Monday night's Comedy Club at 10:30.
Life went on at the precinct in a more or less predictable harmony. That is, until they hired the other typist.
A glamorous new office worker reveals a world of exciting opportunities to a straight-laced young lady.
I looked at her. She was hypnotic.
Which leads to a dangerous friendship.
I suppose more warning bells should have chimed inside my head. Mostly, the whole incident had simply set off a sort of insatiable curiosity within me.
Book at Beach Time, The Other Typist by Suzanne Rendell. Made for 4Extra. Throughout next week, starting on Monday afternoon at 2:30.
All the fun of the fair with Mel next here on 4Extra. I'll be back with all the fun of the Tea Time comedy at 5. We'll be getting Like They've Never Been Gone with Roy Hood and June Whitfield, followed by the Million Pound Radio Show with Andy Hamilton.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
10-4, 10-4, Rubber Duck. This is Silverfish. It's time to spin the donuts on the 4OS. Yeehaw!
For the uninitiated, that's a CB radio speak for hello, I'm Mel Gedroych, and it's time to set off on another 4 o'clock show adventure. Ah, there's nothing like it. Heading off into the wide blue yonder in Melvin, the magical mystery tour bus, with not a care in the world. I've got my packet of sandwiches, an old copy of Jackie magazine, a flask of Earl Grey tea and a Victoria sponge the size of a tractor tyre. And I'm not the only one enjoying life behind the wheel.
Dostoevsky's as happy as can be. This is the life, Stan, he calls. The open road, the world's our oyster. We're wild and footloose and we're fancy free.
Yes, coming up later, we'll find out who's enjoying life on the open road in our story, The Boy Who Swam with Piranhas by David Almond.
1-9, breaker, breaker. Are you receiving me, Rubber Duck? Yeah, I think we've got some stormy weather heading our way.
The wind drafts sucking back up into the cloud were so strong and severe that they took the hailstorms up and down several times in the cloud, and when they're heavy enough to fall to ground, down they come.
Yeah, we'll hear about the day Bournemouth was hit by hailstones the size of golf balls.
Have you got your ears on, Rubber Duck? Because this little lady's lost her head.
The headless lady was always the biggest money taker. We used to have to keep smelling salts in the place because people used to faint.
And we'll hear from the lady who spent her working life as the headless lady at a sideshow attraction. So strap yourself in, Rubber Duck. Yes, Dusty Ferret, Dusty Ferret. It's time to hammer down and put the pedal to the metal. We're gone. Oh yeah, we're grinding the gears as we set off on another of Mel's magical mystery tours. So, the big question is, where are we heading to today? Well, let me consult the map. Okay, so all I have to do is take a left turn here, right turn there, second left at the light, pop across the Atlantic Ocean, take a left and then head west across America for 1,641 miles. Well, bit of a tall order within the space of the show, but luckily I've got trusty old Melvin, the Magical Mystery Tour bus, and his water wings to help me. So where are we heading? Would it help if I told you our destination is the fifth biggest state in America? Any ideas? Don't worry, I'll drizzle a few more clues over the rest of the show. Our story this week is a very special 4 o'clock show adaptation of David Arman's story, The Boy Who Swam with Piranhas, and it's read by the author himself.
You come to do some work? Asked Dostoevsky. Are you leaving? Said Stan. Indeed we are. The stalls tucked down, the ducks is packed, the caravans hooked up. Where will you go? Here and there, and near and far. There's plenty work for you to do, said Dostoevsky. All them little fish to care for.
Splish, splash, I was taking a bath long about a Saturday night. Yeah.
In today's episode, Stanley gets a job on a hooker duck stall tending to the rubber ducks. He should count himself lucky that he only has to look after 9 or 10 ducks and not 29,000. That was the number of bath toys that went missing after falling from their cargo ship into the Pacific Ocean in 1992. Since then, rubber ducks, blue turtles and green frogs have washed up as far north as the Arctic Circle and as far south as Hawaii. One man who's been fascinated by this event and has even written a book about it is Donovan Hone. He told Today programme presenter James Naughtie how he spent the last few years tracking their progress across the seas.
In 2005, when I first heard of this story, 13 years after the toys had fallen overboard, there were news reports that they were about to be arriving in the North Atlantic, having crossed the Arctic. And so that I initially just wanted to know, did they make it? They were supposed to have reached the North Atlantic. But I got a map from the oceanographers who have been tracking the toys over the years, and it was something about having a map on which these toys and their drifting had drawn a kind of trail.
Amazing. So they're looking at currents and saying, where did they end up?
Yeah, that's exactly how oceanographers in the 19th century charted currents, just throwing things overboard and hoping people find them and write back.
So what is the story of where they've gone?
So they fell overboard in the North Pacific, just south of the Aleutian Islands, to the west of...